Hello and welcome to Lexitecture, a podcast about word origins and histories. My name is Ryan, and in each episode, my friend Amy and I bring a new pair of words to share their stories with each other and you. You can find our past episodes and the occasional blog post on our website at lexitecture.com. Follow along with us on Twitter and Facebook at Lexitecture. And if you really like what we do, you can support the show at patreon.com/lexitecture. Today's episode, Cataract Shed.
Anyway, shall we word?
We shall.
Cool.
Would you like to take it away this time?
Oh, go on then. Let me find all the very many tabs. So, it's been a while. I'm quite excited.
It has.
It has been a while. Sorry, everyone.
Yeah.
I've had a crazy 2023, and it's only March.
Yeah.
So since the start of the year, I started the year in a not particularly wonderful place, mental health-wise. It's a bit of an understatement.
Right, yeah.
And I couldn't go to my work without having a panic attack. So that was quite, problematic. So Christmas and New Year were quiet and fine and good. And then in the first week of January, I was given the offer of an out, basically a Pilates studio in Dundee offered me some work. And I absolutely jumped on this and handed in my notice as a teacher. I didn't on the spur of the moment. I talked about it with my husband and stuff. But that was my plan. I was going to do that.
Yeah.
And then I sort of magically found myself in another job. It was quite magic. Like, the story was pretty crazy. Should I tell the story? You know the story, but...
Yeah, you might as well.
So...
It's a good story.
So about 6 months ago, I was looking at jobs, not in a I'm aiming to get another job sort of way, just in a I'm miserable and hate this and don't want to do it forever. I wonder what it looks like to look for a job just now sort of way.
Yeah.
And I saw, I had no idea what most of the jobs were because I've not looked for a job in a really long time. So I found one for a content writer and I had no idea what that was, but I do like writing. So I was curious and read the article. And the article said, the advert said that it would be a bonus if I was familiar with the Ask You Answer. I didn't know what that was. So I looked it up and I discovered it was a book. It was a book about marketing. And I was curious enough to buy it and read it. And I got really excited because, you know, I knew that at some point in the future I would be marketing my Pilates business. And this book basically said, in order to be an effective marketer, become an educator. And I was
right.
Like, well, cool. I already know how to do that stuff.
Yeah.
There were a lot of things in the job advert they wanted me to do that I didn't really know how to do. So... I got myself fully rabbit holed up, and over the course of the last 6 months, pretty much, I have been learning about WordPress and web design and Photoshop and After Effects and lots of kind of, if I want to create good educational materials, what sort of skills do I need? And I reached out to a friend of mine from school. He works in media, and I basically said to him, if I wanted to get a job as a content writer, these are the sort of things that I'm trying to get better at just now. Are these useful skills? And he was like, yeah, you'll be the total package if you know how to do all these things. They probably won't pay you a great deal of money because content writers don't make that much money. But, you know, you would be very well set up to do that sort of job. I was like, okay, cool. But really, it was about selling my own business when that kind of came time to happen. So didn't really forget all about the first advert because it was for a business that's fairly local, and it set me off on like such a path that I almost felt like getting in touch with them to say like, thanks for giving me this sort of little hint as to what direction I should take. It's been really useful to me, but that felt a bit weird. So I didn't do that. And then 3 days after I handed in my notice as a teacher, the same job advert popped up again in my emails. And this time I was completely qualified to do the job precisely because I had seen it 6 months earlier.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So they wanted me to make a video application, and I made the most ridiculous video application known to mankind. It was hilarious.
It was pretty great.
It was just, yeah. And I sent it off and immediately thought, oh my God, what have I done? They're either going to take out a restraining order or they're going to give me the job.
And there's no in between.
There was no in between, like no possibility of anything in between. But thankfully they gave me the job. So fantastic. I started that a few weeks ago. So I have a completely different life to the life that I had 3 months ago. It's quite bizarre. So yeah, I'm also like feeling way better and not miserable anymore. So that's good.
That's awesome.
Yeah. What with the being able to sleep and the having a job that doesn't make me feel terrible, like things are pretty good around here these days. It's quite nice.
Awesome.
Anyway, the company that I work for makes timber garden buildings. I am a content writer for a company that makes timber garden buildings, sheds, summer houses, garages, and garden rooms. And so I felt like it was just like doing the great, coincidental, brilliant, fated job a disservice if I did not talk to you about the word shed.
Oh, fantastic. I was sort of hoping this is what...
I mean, you know me. I often apply an I love lamp approach to my word selection. Yeah. What's in my life at the moment? So right now, sheds are very much a part of my life. I've been learning a whole lot about timber and construction methods. And it's cool. And there are a lot of really excellent words that are quite, you know...
Yeah.
Basically, I've been put in a situation where I'm getting paid to immerse myself in quite niche, geeky information. Like, happy as a pig in shit. Quite literally. You know, yeah. I can't think of any better situation for my brain to be in.
Oh, so, for sure.
So yeah, I could have told you about sarking, and I could have talked to you about tanalization, and all sorts of really cool words. But I thought, let's just stick with sheds.
Yeah, might as well.
Yeah. So I discovered that it's... I really didn't know what I was going to find when I looked up this word. Mm-hmm. And what I found is that the oldest entry for the word shed, S-H-E-D, is from circa 950.
Jeez.
So it's an obsolete usage, but it's a little bit curious. It's a little bit interesting.
Okay.
And this first usage of the noun shed is a distinction or a discrimination to separate one thing from another. Okay, so... It's an obsolete usage, but the later, most of the earlier citations in the OED are older Middle English. And while, you know, I really love reading Old English aloud, but let's face it, it doesn't mean anything to anyone.
Right.
It certainly doesn't mean a great deal to me, even when I'm reading the words.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
The 1674 and 1703 talk about no shed, no difference between things. That's literally what the quotation
says. Oh, okay.
No sheds, no difference. So there's no way to discriminate. And the OED points out that... The etymology is Germanic, and it relates to the verb to shed. So the first usage of the verb to shed is again like Old English, earlier than 950. So the verb predates the noun as far as I can see, which is quite interesting by itself. And the sense given here is to separate or to divide. It says it's now only a dialectic use. It's chiefly used in farming. So to separate lambs from ewes or calves from cows.
Right.
And there's a reference to a lovely Scots phrase, which I've never, ever heard, to shed the shanks, which means to set the legs apart. So I suppose if you're the sort of person who likes a crazy Tory power stance, then you are shedding the shanks, which is quite a pleasing thing to say.
It's pretty great.
Etymologically, this is probably cognate with another word that's given here, shod. And what shod means, and sometimes shed is also used in this sense, it is the crown of the head or the parting of the hair, which I thought was quite lovely, okay. Given that the sense of differentiation was coming in the first usages. So to separate one side of your hair from the other side of the hair. It's quite nice.
I like
then
that.
We got into the second noun sense, which is originally cited in 1457. Although in the said city that occupy houses not inhabited as shops, sellers, shaddies is the shaddys that they use.
Ooh.
And this definition that OED gives us, a slight structure built for shelter or storage or for use as a workshop, either attached as a lean-to to a permanent building or separate, often with open front or sides. The special purpose is indicated by a defining word prefix, as in cow shed or tool shed or goat shed or,
right.
or whatever else. And this is the kind of sheds that I have been immersing myself in. And the super cool thing, this is one of these, you know how sometimes you look up a word, you find out a bit about its etymology and you go, oh God, yeah, of course. Oh, it's probably not that interesting. I can't really talk much about that. And other times you're like, it's precisely because it's so obvious that I should talk about this. So I had a look at Etym Online. They define shed as a building for storage. They have the first citation as 1855, although they point out that earlier it's meant as a light or temporary shelter, which I think is the usage that OED is talking about with that, you know, very, very much earlier citation. And it is possibly a dialectical variant of a specialised use of shade.
Oh.
Because of course it is.
Right.
Yeah, so we get shade, meaning a dark image cast by something or something, someone or something, obscurity or gloom caused by the blockage of light. And OED traces this back through late Old English sciad, meaning partial darkness or shelter or protection, which of course makes perfect sense because when the first shelters were built, they cast shade and there probably wouldn't have been much light inside them.
Yeah.
In fact, this usage is pretty stable all the way back to our Proto-Indo-European root, skoto, meaning dark or shade. The cognates given on Etym Online are nightshade, as in the plant, skotoma, shade, shadow, and shady. And skotoma means a defect in your visual field.
Okay.
Or the Greek word skotoma meant dizziness, as in a darkening of your sight. So dizziness accompanied by dimness of sight. So that idea of shade holds kind of throughout the centuries. The verb to shed, as in to cast off, doesn't come from the same pi root at all. Which I found very, very interesting. This leans more towards this early noun sense of to divide or to separate. And it's from a different pi root. This pi root is skei, S-K-E-I, which means to cut or to split.
Right.
There are some really nice words in the cognate here. Just lots of type sounds. So we have all are part of abscissa, conscience, conscious, escudo, escutcheon, esquire, nescience, nescient, nice, all the way back in episode one.
Yeah.
Omniscience, plebiscite, prescience, prescient, rescind, rescission, science, sciolist, schism, schism, schist, schizophrenia, shin, sheath, sheave, shingle. There are so many words that come from this single root.
That's
however,
delightful.
They all, including shit, mean that there is a sense of separation or splitting happening within the different words.
Right. Yeah.
As well as these senses, there are other meanings for this same word. So we have dating from 1648, the thing that has been shed, so as in a silkworm's cocoon, or the cast-off shell of a crab. Oh, I've skipped one. I've skipped two in terms of time. Sorry, there's also 1425, something that's fallen or discarded or cast off, the adjective. We get a young salmon from 1 to 2 years old. I don't know how much you know about the language used for salmon in different stages of their life. There's a whole episode in that topic, at least one. There are so many fantastically cool words, because salmon are, I mean, salmon are, I know this is a super niche thing to say, salmon are really fascinating creatures. They're also delicious, which is nice.
It helps.
Yeah, but there's all sorts of really brilliant, beautiful language associated with salmon.
My favorite thing about salmon and words related to salmon is how horrified a sentient salmon would be to realize that the color salmon is pink. Why have you called it pink? Why have you named pink a color after me? Oh, it's my insides.
Oh, you're my actual. Oh,
salmon colors should be silvery, right? Like reflective. Oh, okay.
Would be like if we called the color red guts.
Or just person colors, like the color of viscera.
Person red.
Colored. Yeah.
I never thought of that. That's nice. Well, I mean, nice in this sense. It's not in any way nice.
Yeah.
We then have, and I love this, the second sense of the verb shed. The first sense given here, dating from around about 1600, means to roof over. So the 15th day of September, the foreign butchers began to keep their market in Leaden Hall, which was shaded round about for them to stand dry. So the verb to put up a shelter. And then originally cited from 1850, to shed, meaning to put in a shed. You can also, in New Zealand colloquial language, say shed up. When you shed up sheep, you put them under cover to prevent their fleeces from getting wet before shearing.
Got it.
And if anyone knows anything about putting shed into sheep,
it'd be the Kiwis.
Sheep into sheds, I'd say that most New Zealanders are reasonably well qualified to at least give a passing view on such a matter. So, yeah, shed. Shed loads of shed meanings.
Interesting.
The website that I am writing for is super duper full of and massively loves shed puns. So please, if you think you have any good shed puns, let me know. We have a shed education centre on our website.
Nice.
We refer to our customers as sheddies. And an interesting a little thing that I've been wondering about. We often refer to sort of slightly humorously to the shed gods. The shed gods are smiling on us today.
Right.
And I started wondering, what would the shed gods be?
Oh.
Like, obviously there's a god of timber.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But in the pantheon of shed gods, perhaps a god of nails, a god of paint.
Yeah.
A god of tongue and groove. I don't know. I don't know how niche we should get with that.
I hope your website...
I'm quite enjoying... Sorry?
I hope your website section for hours of operation is your work schedule.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. We say schedule. You don't get that same pun. Mm.
You should start saying schedule.
Well,
then it works even better as a pun. If you just said schedule, nobody would know you were making a pun.
I'm also, I would really like for us to give our products shed degrees.
Oh, I like that too.
So that you can kind of trace where they were made and who made them. And I think they used to do that. The company used to put little plaques on the buildings that they made to say who had constructed them and all that sort of thing. But I'm getting so much pleasure out of sheds.
That's fantastic.
Who would have thought that I would be here at this point in time really, really loving writing about timber buildings.
That's so cool. I was actually, as you were going through the thing, I was sort of building up in my head, I was kind of going, oh, right, yeah, cool. Because part of what you're doing is when you put things in a shed is keeping them separate. Like you have some things that just can stay outside, or you have some things to go into a shed. And
are you trying to marry together two unrelated etymologies, Ryan?
Well, I was before you said they were two unrelated. I was like, oh, that's where this comes from. Obviously, it's because they're separate. And now I'm doing it on purpose, but also not on purpose, but because I can't help it. It's like, well, isn't shade just separating from light? So there you go. Mm. Now they work together. Folk etymology.
I don't know how I feel about etymological inbreeding. Is this something we should encourage or not? I'm not sure.
Certainly mess up the shed agree.
Yeah, indeed.
That's very cool. It's And interestingly, there are things that I think will occur to you as being like, oh, these two words, your word and my word for this time, do relate, although it's a bit of a leap to get there. But there were things in your description that were like, interesting that we have a couple of tie-in points here between your word and mine. Although they couldn't be more different.
And let's face it, we love a leap.
We love a leap. So my word is cataract.
Ooh.
Or cataracts. So what is the first thing that comes to your mind when you hear the word cataract?
Well, first thing is probably the eye problem. But yeah. I very quickly thought, oh, is it about eyes or is it about like chasms? And then I thought, how are those two things in any way related? Maybe they're not. Do right. tell, Ryan.
So the ocular, and it was interesting because there was an ocular condition that you brought up in the cognate words for
yes,
shade.
Scotoma.
So that was kind of like, oh, ding. so yeah, the I think the one that most people would be familiar with is the vision problem. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I'm in terms of chasms, but more just I've heard it as waterfalls described as cataracts.
Okay.
And mainly poetic, usually in the context of poetry, or people who are being especially flowery with language for whatever reason.
Hello, my name is Amy, you know, and I am especially flowery.
Fair enough. Yeah, guilty also. But in the same way, like you say, those two things don't make any sense as being connected whatsoever. But it's too weird a word for them not to be, right?
Right. Yeah, well, maybe? That's what I would have thought.
So I'll start with the etymology because it everything else kind of makes sense from that. Sometimes we go through all the different uses and stuff and then get around to the etymology later, but we'll start with this. So it's from Latin and Greek before that. And the two elements are cat or cata, meaning down, and the second either being arhaten or raten, meaning to either strike hard in the first one or to dash or break for the second one.
Ooh,
and so obviously the
interesting
whether the second half has the A or the first half has the A, that's why this cat or cata, but they both mean down either way. So far so good, right? Waterfall.
Yeah, things that strike down.
Splash down, come down, dash or break cool. at the bottom, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So the etymology of this, it's not actually that interesting just for the origins of it because now we've done that. To fall down, there we go, waterfall. But it's been used in a bunch of different ways and that's sort of what's interesting and confusing and delightfully both, for me anyway. So in addition to it being a cataract being a waterfall, which it was in both Latin and Greek. So it's waterfalls sort of, a cataract has always been a waterfall. But a cataract has also been a portcullis, which is the metal / wood grating fortification that sort of falls down and comes down in front of the door of a castle or a fort or something to give it an extra fortification.
That's super cool.
So that thing is a portcullis, and that thing was a cataract as well.
Nice.
The earliest English sense of cataract was, it was always a plural. So it was always cataracts. Mm-hmm. And what it meant was it was the floodgates of heaven. So it was what held back the rain. And the cataracts have opened is what happens when there's like a massive downpour.
Oh, the sluices that's are open. Very beautiful.
It is.
Did that come from the portcullis sense? Or did it come from the waterfall sense? Or is there just a really curiously beautiful overlap between those two things?
Exactly. So this is where we're going with this. This is why I knew you'd like this. So in Greek, the portcullis was actually the earlier use than waterfall. in Latin, they were both common. In English, portcullis is very rarely referred to as a cataract in English. So this is the exact question to me was, you know, do we have the idea that in Greek, portcullis was, a cataract was a portcullis. And then from that kind of the idea of holding something back, is that where like we get the floodgate and then we get the waterfall because of the floodgate connection? Or is it, you know, a cataract descends from the top. That's how it falls into place. It literally falls down like a waterfall. So is that why it was called a portcullis, just because of the down motion? And the down motion is what it's all about?
Because the idea, like, I always think about waterfalls that it seems impossible that the water is just an ordinary river until it becomes the waterfall. You know what I mean? Yeah. Feels like there's a storage tank at the top. Now, there is a storage tank at the top. It's the entire fucking river. But, yeah. Like, I don't know if this is a just me thing or a human experience thing, but I remember as a kid, and also sometimes as an adult, because why not?
Yeah.
Gaining, like, really, really incommensurate pleasure from being in a shower and cupping my hands until they fill up with water.
Correct.
And then bringing my hands apart quickly so that the water crashes down.
Yep.
And it makes that very particular sound that's just really, really satisfying. And it's like, without the water falling down, I couldn't save it up to make the crashing sound. But also without the gates of my hands, I couldn't do that thing either. So that's what this is all kind of making me think about.
Yeah. Oh, that has to be universal, yeah. By the way, that thing where you just collect the water and drop it. Like,
I mean, I don't often talk about the things that, you know, that you do in the shower. That feel a bit weird. I don't know. I mean, you know me, lowering the tone is sort of my thing. But, like, if you have breasts, you can do it with those two, which is awesome fun. Maybe that's not suitable for family listening. Stop. It's not very often I say to you,
thought of that.
Maybe that shouldn't go on the internet. But yeah,
I think that ship has sailed.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So it's just this weird. The other thing I kind of think about when I look at a waterfall is I'm like, surely it must run out soon.
Yeah. Like,
at a waterfall, you really get the sense of scale of just how much water is in a river moving all the time. Because when you go a mile upstream from that river, that is the same amount of water going by any given point. It's just you don't notice it. And then when you have that point being a waterfall, it's like, oh, there actually is a really huge amount of water going. How is there this much water and how is it still happening?
I'm so glad I'm not the only person who wonders things like this in the private space of my own head.
Yeah, it's crazy. The OED is not even really sure. It has a delightfully sort of OED-esque, understated way of saying this. It says, quote, "The sense development in Greek, Latin, and French English is not in all respects clear." Which I think is great.
That's the most wonderful way of saying, think I've ever heard.
Like if you want to say, but you're someone who's wearing a tweed jacket and holding a pipe, you say the sense development is not in all respects clear.
Not in all respects clear.
Yeah. So
I'm picturing like a stupid teenager who's done a crazy thing being asked by the responsible adult, why did you even do that? Why would you do that? The sense development is not in all respects clear.
My motivations in this aspect were not in all respects clear. Yeah. So that's cool because it does seem like it's meant all three things all the way along.
That's beautiful.
And it may be that it's also interesting because we do get examples of like a historical Latin sense of a word sort of kind of dropping out of Latin and the English word coming in, but then the English word sort of looping back almost by accident to an earlier Latin sense. And it's so in that respect, it's like regardless of what was happening in Greek and Latin, the same questions can be asked about the English development, because it started, cataract started as referring to the floodgates of heaven. So it's still not clear, even just in English.
Not in all respects clear.
Which way it went. So that's kind of cool. However, it still doesn't answer the question of how the heck do we get to an eye problem from where we are now? So when what you're picturing right now, what I want you to picture is the entryway to a castle. So you've got the wall, you've got the big archway, you've got the big ornate oak door with all the little awesome rivets in it and stuff. And the portcullis has been lowered.
Okay.
Now, if you're on the inside of that castle and you open that door and the portcullis is down, your view of the rest of the outside is slightly obscured.
Oh, no.
And that apparently is how the ocular condition got its name.
Oh, that is super cool.
So you've opened gates, your eyes, but your vision is still obscured by a thing. Well, it's sort of like being obscured by a portcullis. And that's why it's called a cataract.
That is the most beautifully lyrical, poetic medical etymology I think I've ever heard.
It's pretty awesome.
Cataracts are sucky and they absolutely ruin people's lives.
Yeah,
and
it's
one of these conditions I understand that, you know, like in third world countries, you know, developing countries, people can't access surgery to remove cataracts, and it's a relatively simple procedure, doesn't cost a lot of money, you know, and it can be done quickly and easily, or you can be blind, you know?
Yeah.
And that's criminal. That's absolutely criminal.
Yeah.
But I remember my granny had a cataract surgery. She was pretty elderly when she had it done, but I remember looking at her eyes before she had the surgery, and you could see, you know, you could actually see the parts of her eyes that were cloudy.
Oh yeah.
Because the cataracts had grown in there, but peeking out of a portcullis.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
I mean, I kind of am wondering if this beautiful kind of poetic word is perhaps like a little, well, you have this pretty sucky thing going on with your eyes, but hey, wouldn't it be fun and cool to pretend that you were like peeking out from the gates of heaven?
Yeah.
There's a little portcullis down in front of your, you know, I mean, I don't know how well I would respond to that if
probably
my sight was
not
compromised.
Great.
Quite like being able to see, but that is, from a purely etymological point of view, that this is giving me a great deal of pleasure. From a kind of a medical, social point of view, maybe not so much.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where you would, and it's one, I mean, this sounds stupid, but unless you know it, you'd never know it.
You'd never
because
know
because portcullis is not, that's only historical as a use for this word. So it's only because Latin tended to be how people named diseases and stuff. It's the Latin connection in there for a medical diagnosis, but you'd never guess how those two things are connected because we just don't use cataract in that way. In that intervening step is missing in English.
Yeah. What's the dates for cataract, the eye condition? When was it?
It's quite early.
That?
It's like late 1500s.
Oh, wow.
So it is fairly early, and it was, apparently before that, glaucoma and cataracts were indistinguishable. I think it's glaucoma.
Yeah, I mean, both cause you to lose your sight.
They were just kind of, they weren't distinguished before roughly that time. And then they were just, it was at a time when they just named it this lyrically awesome, neat thing.
I mean, it makes sense that it's from a very, very long time ago if they called it the disease where you can't see as if you were looking out from a portcullis.
Well, yeah.
Because, I mean, I don't know about you, but my portcullis featuring is pretty lax. Never lived in a house with a portcullis. I'm sorry if that's an indictment on my exterior design choices, but I mean, it would be pretty fucking awesome.
Well, listen, nobody's saying it wouldn't be awesome to have a portcullis at the house. Nobody's saying that. It is one of those things where if you did break that out as like a metaphor, you'd be that person that just says the things that are completely unique to you and just say them as though they were to everyone. It's like, man, it's really like looking through the portcullis out front of the door and everyone else at the party goes, what are you talking about?
Yeah, the only potential responses to that sort of spiel, there's only two. There's huh? And there's, oh, fuck off. Yeah. That's it. It's nothing else.
It's the sort of metaphor only works at Eton. That's it.
I don't know. I've never been to Eton. They wouldn't let me in anyway.
No.
Pretty sure they have the wrong parts.
Yeah, they have.
Actually, I don't know. Maybe Eton is co-educational these days. A lot of private schools are. I don't know if that's because they had to be. Maybe there was a sort of change in legislation there. Yeah, don't get me started on.
There's a whole
public school system. Yeah.
What?
Nobody got time for that.
No. So interesting. Sort of to wrap things up, the kata element of cataract was something that I kind of. I was like, oh, it's a prefix. It's its own element. That's weird. That doesn't show up anywhere else in English. But
cataclysm?
Cataclysm, to strike down. Catalog, to list or count down. Catastrophe is to wind or turn down, like a reversal of fortune. A catapult, because down has... The kata meaning is sort of sometimes about the direction, i.e. down, and sometimes about the fact that there's an impact. So it's often used like against... or towards, or, you know, whatever.
I presume the pult part of catapult is the same root that we use in propulsion.
I think so. Yeah, I think that's it. It's because it's the hurl against. Or catheter, to send down.
Ah, nice, yeah.
Yeah, so a lot of those things. But yeah, so the kata is actually more common than you think. But it's, so cataract... waterfall, portcullis, gates of heaven, things that obscure your vision, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, that was a journey.
It was a journey.
Cool.
Yeah. So there we are.
Nice.
File that away in the cataract shed.
The cataract shed sounds,
they're horrifying.
I don't know. I'd go and see their gigs.
Oh, yeah, it does sound like a good band name.
And that's it for another episode of Lexitecture. To get in touch with us about something you heard in this episode, you can email us at words@lexitecture.com. You can also follow along and talk to us at Lexitecture on Facebook and Twitter, and at Lexitecture Podcast on Instagram. For back episodes and the occasional blog post, visit us at lexitecture.com. Thanks very much, and we'll talk to you again soon.